Recorded live at Nightmare Studios in Houston, Texas, you're listening to the Genghis and Ragman Show, where two jamokes drink and rate craft beer while they chew the fat about the world of hard rock and heavy metal, followed up by one-on-one interviews with veterans and newcomers in the industry. I'm your official announcer, Joey Clams, and here to introduce themselves is tonight's special guest.
What's up? This is Elijah Witt from Cane Hill, and I give you the right to rock.
Without further ado, here are two co-hosts who are so metal, they use aluminum foil for toilet paper. It's Genghis and Ragman.
What's up? I'm Elijah Witt from Cane Hill, and you're listening to the Genghis and Ragman Show. Horns up! Guys, you're on live with Ragman, Mono e Mono, and I'm talking really live. We're at the Scout Bar, and we're at just a monster freaking bill tonight. Cane Hill, Tremonti, Seven Dust, and we grabbed Elijah Witt from Cane Hill, vocalist. If you guys aren't familiar, you're going to get familiar now. Elijah, welcome to the Right to Rock. It's an absolute pleasure to have the Right to Rock.
Nice. So today's the first day of the tour. There's a lot to talk about, but kind of tell me how the tour came together, how you guys got involved, and it looks like you're going to be on a pretty good run.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a basic, here's an email saying that you got a tour, except real simple, no fireworks. But when we got it, we were really excited. We always wanted to tour Seven Dust. They signed to Rise a year back, so we figured it was just an inevitable amount of time before we did. And Tremonti is a fucking legend, so yeah. This is really cool for us young bucks to be on. And tour does look really good. I mean, we're hearing that a lot of the shows throughout the entire thing are selling out ahead of time. Small venues, big venues, kind of doesn't matter. Seven Dust draws. So.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I got to tell you, it's funny because I had a connection with you. I knew, you know, through Rise and Amy, and got on the list for one ticket for Cane Hill. That's all I could get. Mm. So I had to reach out to Seven Dust people to try to get another ticket because I was just going to buy a ticket.
Yeah.
And I couldn't do it. Sold out for a month or so. Yeah.
This is one of the smaller venues. It still really isn't a small venue, you know. Seven Dust fans are insane.
Yeah.
So you want a ticket, you got to click it fast. I mean, New Orleans sold out. New Orleans never fucking sells out. So, yeah, my parents wanted to come to the New Orleans show. I'm like, I can't help you. I don't have enough guest lists. I don't have fucking tickets to give you. Like, you got to go to StubHub. Fees. Wow.
That's crazy, man. In some of these like meet and greet packages, you pay like $100 or whatever it is, and you don't even get a ticket at that point.
It's insane. Yeah, I mean, it's in a music industry that's constantly changing, where you don't really make money off of records anymore. You got to find new lucrative ways to make your money, and I guess the best way to do it is to give the fans incentive to get stuff that they don't have ahead of time, and then make them buy a ticket too.
Oh yeah, exactly. So, what's your game plan? You've got this new EP, Kill the Sun, which I got to tell you, I'm going to just give you a little background. I didn't know who I knew the name. Mm-hmm. I thought I knew the band, but then I put in Kill the Sun. I'm like, where do they fit in to this puzzle of Sabadust Tremonti? But then I did some research afterwards. But so the EP, kind of tell us about the EP and kind of what you guys were thinking, and we'll go from there.
When we decided to do the EP, it was just kind of to get some different emotions out there from the band, other than just anger or hate or whatever goes into the heavy music, you know. So a lot of these songs deal with content that wouldn't really be appropriate for heavy songs, so we just kind of decided to explore our musical horizons, kind of maybe show off a little bit what we're capable of doing, which is always fun. And I don't know, the music scene seems to have gotten a little stale, where bands just put out the same record over and over again, and that's been happening for fucking decades. But we don't want to be one of those bands. We'd like to continuously progress, even if that means changing our sound drastically every once in a while, just to keep people on their toes. So just like, curveballs are our forte.
Well, that's nice, because I went back and listened to Too Far Gone and bought it. And I was like, hell yeah, dude. So this is how they fit in. So I'll ask you a question here. As far as Kill the Sun, the EP stuff, mm-hmm. how much do you incorporate that into your set? A song or two? Or are you going to say, enjoy, guys. This isn't really a live thing.
It's an eventual live thing. Right now, our set is just heavy. We like the energy of heavy shows more anyway. So if we're going to do Kill the Sun in any capacity, it's going to be very specifically Kill the Sun. Like, if we did a headliner, maybe have matinee shows, or if we have like more than a 30-minute set, anything from 45 minutes to an hour, we'll probably throw in one or two Kill the Sun songs when we can add the dynamics into it. But as far as having a support slot, it's all about kind of that boom, boom, boom feeling of just unabridged anger and revolution, you know?
Well, I was hoping Acid Rain was going to be
That would have been the one that I would want to do during a heavy set. Either that or like Smoking Man, that last song on that EP.
Yeah.
Yeah, the softest stuff I would never, ever, ever put on a metal tour. But if it's our own thing, sure, 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 sure.
Habitual intentions.
Acid Rain to me kind of has an Alice in Chains type feel to it, and I really dig it. And the more I hear it, the more I love it. I love the vocal harmony stuff you guys are doing too, man.
Yeah, vocal harmonies are always kind of my favorite thing. I mean, going back to Alice in Chains, the grunge era, Godsmack, the fucking You know when you draw a blank when you know exactly what you're talking about? Fucking yeah. Soundgarden, man. Chris Cornell. Harmonies are so key to that kind of dissolving feeling, like the dropping in your music. Like, it gives you that sunken feeling. And I think a lot of people really underestimate octaves as harmonies, which I think can be even more haunting than adding a fifth or a third over it. But yeah, the building those vocals in Acid Rain was an absolute trip in itself. It was fun to do. Yeah.
That's awesome. Because that song's interesting. Like I said, there's an Alice in Chains vibe, but when you get to the solo section, that's almost kind of like a Soundgarden type vibe on the guitar thing. I was like, I really like... I'm not a huge fan of grunge, but those were two bands I dug.
Wow, not a huge fan of grunge. I don't understand. It's so depressing. That's my shit.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm like a sad guy. So grunge fits right up my alley.
Well, dude, I'm an older guy. I used to have hair.
Right.
A long time ago. So, 80s, I grew up in the golden age of metal. In the early 80s, late 70s. So I was in the whole, you know, big hair, loud guitars, flashiness. And then when grunge came along and my music died, I got a little bitter. But I did like bands like Alice in Chains, Pearl Jam, Soundgarden. Yeah, yeah.
I really like greasy hair, so that works for me. You know, like not washing yourself and living in your own self-pity is kind of my vibe.
Well, it kind of works, you know. You're a touring band, young band. That might be what you got to do.
Shower, so yeah. I'm living in my own essence, which is what I call my stench.
Well, you want to hear something? I interviewed a band called Moors Precipium Est. They're really heavy.
Dark.
They are. Yeah. They are, and I think they're from like Finland or something like that.
Of course they are.
It was like three or four bands on the same tour bus. So if one guy goes and takes a shit, everybody knows.
I would easily kill myself with four bands on one tour bus.
They were real happy. They're like, we don't even shower now.
Yeah. I wouldn't either. I wouldn't enter the bathroom. I'd stay in my bunk, if you even have a bunk, with four bands on one bus.
Well, I want to ask you something. I read you guys had done a piece with Revolver a while back, and it was between the first album and Too Far Gone, where you guys were really kind of partying it up quite a bit, and then you kind of came down and, you know, cut a bunch of that stuff out. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, with the approach of Kill the Sun, is that any kind of repercussion of, you know, a mixed feelings from that one period where you're like, you know, this was so rough, dude, and then cutting a bunch of that out's got to be rough.
Yeah.
Did a lot of the vibe from Kill the Sun come from that?
I think in general Kill the Sun is a musical come down. Like when you stop living that fast-paced life where you're doing a bunch of hallucinogenics or drinking yourself into oblivion every day. I mean, you cut it out and you have a lot of self-reflection. I mean, trust me, when you're doing hallucinogenics, there's a lot of self-reflection, but it's all self-induced, so you're kind of telling yourself what you want to hear a lot of the times, or you're faced with some realities that you can kind of warp with your own brain if you're like capable of doing that. And I think, unfortunately, I was. I mean, like, you go into a trip, and if you have the right mindset, you can control what you're thinking, so you definitely have self-reflective moments, but it's biased just because of who you are. Then when you cut all of it out, you are faced with a very sobering reality. And ironically, like, you have to deal with yourself in a way that you can't really run away from, because you've got nowhere to hide. You've got nothing to push away any of the thoughts that are coming to your head. And you do some reevaluating of your life. And that's mostly what Acid Rain was about. A lot of reevaluating the choices we made, how it affected our relationships with our friends or our family, even ourselves, and kind of realizing it was massively self-deprecating, and trying to come back from that a better person.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome, dude. At what point in Too Far Gone did you guys, like, hit that wall where you said, something's got to change?
Shiprocked, which ended yesterday this year. So 2 years ago we did Shiprocked. We were right in the thick of writing everything, and we had one final bad trip on that boat, after a few bad trips where everybody either ended up drowning themselves in their own tears or having existential crises of forgetting who they are for extended periods of time. And we were doing acid 2 times a week, not much of a gap between trips, which is incredibly unhealthy.
Oh, yeah.
They say do it like once a year. And it wasn't like one hit. It was like five, six, seven hits at a time. Like, it was fun. But so we just hit a wall on Shiprock, I think, was like the final straw. We had a few bad trips that were painful, and then that one was just borderline schizophrenia. You know, you like it wasn't a fun time. We didn't know what we were doing or where we were going. Nothing felt right on that one. It kind of had lost its luster to us, and we no longer really wanted to experiment with that. We decided that we had done it. We had gotten what we needed out of it because we wrote a bunch of really fucking weird music, a lot of which will probably never see the light of day. It was weird. And look what the Beatles got after, like, what, three trips?
Yeah.
They went full-blown walrus.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a defining moment in it. And then we tracked Too Far Gone a few months later.
Well, that's awesome. And I'm glad that you guys hit that wall because you guys... You could have lost your record deal. Everything could have died. So I'm glad you did. Congratulations, man. I know that's going to be tough.
It feels good.
I want to ask you about Lord of Flies. Mm-hmm. I really, really dig that song. And I've just had the new record a few days. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about that song?
I mean, that song, we originally kind of went in listening to a bunch of Soundgarden again, and we were thinking maybe we can do this kind of trippy, aggressive rock song. It wasn't even intended to probably be as catchy as it is, but that was like a fortunate outcome of it.
Mm-hmm.
And lyrically, I mean, because that's all I really know how to talk about, it's just kind of about looking at those people in life that you've placed a lot of trust in, and it's been manipulated, and not seeing what's very obvious in front of your eyes about people who aren't good, and understanding and accepting that you can't really expect the best out of people because the human nature is naturally to be selfish and manipulative and fucked up. And,
right.
And that was kind of like what it was like being on that other side of it, where you're the one being manipulated and fucked with and thrown around at someone else's will. I just kind of should have expected it, which is the unfortunate reality of the situation and humankind.
Yeah. Well, I like it, and that to me, when I was listening, it almost had kind of a Slipknot feel to it a little bit.
We have heard that once or twice.
Oh, okay. I just love the dynamic, just being a new fan.
Mm-hmm.
I get the heavy stuff with there's, you know, more heavier like Pantera or mm-hmm. Slipknot and stuff like that, and then you go to this like Alice in Chains. It's almost like your jar of flies,
right.
So to speak, you know?
Yeah, that's what gave us the idea. Alice in Chains did all these fucking heavy grunge records, and then they're like, yeah, fucking acoustic stuff. We're like, we can do that.
Well, let me ask you, what about 86th No Escort?
Right.
That's a different title. I love the song. It's really, really catchy. What's that song about?
lines become obscure. This head feels so impure. Your name and face is blurred, 'cause I only care for her.
That song's about a lot of time spent on Warped Tour, which was kind of the beginning of that whole phase for us. I mean, the EP kind of starts at one point in our lives, and then, like a concept album, goes through a story and a process, and then ends with the realization that we shouldn't do what we're doing. But 86 No Escort is kind of that that initial, I legitimately don't care about anything that I'm doing. I only care about the her or the substance or the whatever it is that's able to keep our minds off of what we're actually doing to people and what's happening around us, and this kind of haphazard avoidance of your own consequences and how it affects what surrounds you, you know, like very 90s apathy style, which was the move, I think, for that one.
I might throw you for a loop on this one, because Empty, the next song on the EP, to me it's a quirky kind of song. It's almost got kind of a Beatle-type-esque melody to it. Did you guys think about that, or is this the first time you've heard that?
That's the first time I've heard Beatle-style melody. I've heard Latin-influenced, which is interesting because we've never listened to Latin music, but I definitely see the vibe that we created was kind of Latin, but... we wrote that song. We had one of our friends come in and help us with this. His name's Brian Samus. He's this pop artist called Oliver the Kid. He's got a rock band called La Bouquet. He was, and would probably hate for me to say this, the drummer of The Neighborhood when they started. So he's got like this very fluid background of pop music and kind of modern alternative. And he looked at me during the chorus. I'm like, I'm not really entirely sure what to do with this. And he's like, if I tell you what I do, it would be falsetto, but that's ridiculous. And I was like, well, hold the phone. Let's work with that, see where it goes.
Yeah.
And that's just what we came up with, kind of pretty eerie, weird, almost uncomfortable, at the same time kind of chorus, but it worked.
Oh, yeah.
I think
so too. There's an instrumental part in, I don't know if there's a solo, the bass is doing something. It's almost like a When I'm 64 type boom,
yeah.
Boom, boom.
Yeah.
That's where I get the Beatle thing.
You know, he's old, so our bassist is the oldest one of us, I guess, subjectively old. He's 30. He's basically 80.
I wish I was 30, dude. last song I want to bring up is Save Me. That's... Acid Rain's my favorite now, but my first favorite was Save Me. Do you have a good story about how Save Me came together?
Yeah.
In broken picture frames, the photographs remain. A woman and a figure, I don't recognize the face. His smile appears unbroken, but today you'll never know the consequence that comes from hating who you love. No, don't try to save me. Wait for me to save myself.
Yeah, that one was about this part of my life I never really liked talking about, but we had a friend who was in a similar situation that I was, kind of like this abusive relationship, emotionally, mentally, physically abusive, and one day we were sitting there and I was basically hearing my entire relationship echoed at me, where every time somebody would try to confront her about the problems and how what is happening isn't okay, you know, whether it's the significant other getting furious with her when something goes on to the point of violence, or like putting them down so emotionally that there's really no coming back, like breaking their soul, essentially. Yeah. And then they said something. It was, I forget entirely what it was that got me, but it was something like her mom was trying to calm the guy down in the car, and a kid looked up at her, a stepchild looked up at her and said, "Don't do that. That just makes him more angry." And I was like, "This is just fucked up." And I had a bunch of flashbacks to when I was in a relationship that was really similar to that. Physical violence, emotional violence, just like really broke me for a long time. And that's what came out. Because I remember dating that girl. My mother came over and she gave me this packet of papers which explained the telltale signs of an abusive relationship. And I basically threw it in her face, told her to fuck off. Barely talked to her for the 3 years that I dated that girl. And then when I finally did manage to get out of it, I kind of revisited it, looked at it, and I was like, this does all add up to something very fucked up. So that's kind of the don't try to save me, wait for me to save myself, because when you're in that situation, it's really hard to listen to anyone's outside perspective, because you think that it's so much different when you're not in public, and that makes it okay, because in private, there's no one to make you look bad in front of, or put you down in front of, or even in private, I mean, things can seem significantly okay just because you don't know what you deserve or what you're supposed to have, so you're not going to listen to someone telling you you deserve better because you think what you have is normal or fine, because you've been so manipulated and broken that it's your normality at that point. So that's where that song came from.
Well, dude, that's one thing I was going to bring up, is it seems like there's a lot of pain and very, very thoughtful vocals. You put a lot into it, a lot of emotion and stuff like that. And that's what's really turned me into a fan over the last week since I checked you guys out. Vocally, I really like your clean stuff. Do you like doing the more aggressive stuff or more of the clean stuff? And then how do you kind of keep your voice going?
I think I'm real good at screaming, but I definitely like singing more just because it's more fun for me. I get all my pissed off anger out screaming, but I think I like to be a little bit of a show off when I sing, which is an enjoyable thing to do. I've got a shit ton of warm-ups. I've got shit ton of techniques that I have to go through and master every tour. I lose it as soon as I take a 2-week break. But it's been years of touring and learning the rights and wrong ways and taking lessons with professionals like Melissa Cross up in New York. So I've found a way to keep my voice, and it's just like any other instrument, you just got to take care of it, warm it up, keep it together.
Well, she's an aspiring vocalist and has got a good voice, so... Question for Elijah?
I really like it. I love, like your, like, singing kind of stuff, because, like, I like depressing music, too, because I've been through some stuff in my life as well, and so, I don't know, like, when you sing, like, you can really feel, like, your pain, and I'm also, like, an actor, too, and I write, like, my own, like, monologues and stuff. And, like, I know, like, when I act, like, I, like, really put, like, feelings into it, and I can hear that in your singing, and it just, like, I think it's great. Like, I love it.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm all about honesty in lyrics and honesty in music, and when you're pulling from who you really are and how you really feel, or if you're acting, just making sure that it's as genuine as possible, and, like, you get yourself in the right frame of mind. Being, like, super empathetic to what other people would feel is so important. Just mastering, like, that mindset of you have to feel it to give the right performance. Otherwise, it's going to sound
stupid. It's going to, like, the emotion is what makes it good. Like, if you don't have emotion, then it's, like...
It's fraudulent.
Yeah.
Just
it's
like the Rams in the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you, you're wearing your Saints shirt. You're playing New Orleans tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Playing hometown.
Yeah. Still pissed.
Not going to watch. Don't care to watch.
No, I'm not going to watch that bullshit. If the Patriots win, Tom Brady is a pussy. Yeah. If the Rams win, they didn't deserve it. So I don't give a shit. And the NFL needs to fix their problems.
Oh, yeah. I agree. That was a fucked up missed call, dude.
Not only was it game-defining in everyone's opinion except for Los Angeles fans, who actually probably share that opinion, like, thank God it didn't get called because we would have lost. It was dangerous. It's just downright dangerous to go after somebody with that kind of force head-to-head, you know?
Yeah.
Fucked up.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of people boycott, and I don't really give a shit myself, you know? It's just like, I'm a Cowboys fan.
Right.
And the Rams beat the shit. The Cowboys look pathetic, so.
Yeah,
I was hoping it was going to be a rematch with the Saints and the boys.
Yeah, because then we could have gotten our win back instead of that fucking terrible performance.
You probably would have, especially the way they played against the Rams.
Yeah, fuck the fucking Rams.
Final
opinion.
Well, Elijah, we want to thank you for coming on the Right to Rock. Is there something you'd like to tell the fans out there before we let you go?
Yeah, buy our music.
Do it, because they kick ass, and we're going to play a lot. So, Elijah, thank you for coming on the Genghis Ragman Show here on therighttorock.com. We want to tell all the fans to go out and get Kill the Sun out now on Rise Records. And grab Too Far Gone, because that one kicks ass, too.
Grab both. It's like, what, $20 total?
Yeah.
That's 2 hours of work.
Exactly. Well, I want to wish you luck on the tour, man. You're welcome back on our show anytime, brother.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for having me. Pleasure to meet you.
Sonic X, Adam and Joseph have lent us 13 to finish the show. So what you're listening to right now is 13 by Sonic X. So check them out and keep checking us out. And horns up.